Oh, hey, I'm glad you're here. I was just thinking about how one of the services that my dad's video store provided was VCR repair. Well, not just VCR repair, but they would also do something simpler, which is just cleanings. And so I would see people walk in carrying their VCR, different shapes, makes, and models, and they'd tell them the problem, and usually it was just that the heads were dirty. And if you don't know what those are, it was just like a round metal wheel inside the VCR that the tape would go around. And it would get dusty, and it was pretty easy to clean if you had like a long cotton swab or could remove the top. I'm no VCR repair expert. I never attended DeVry, but VCR cleanings were for the most part pretty simple. And we had one man in the shop who would basically just chain smoke in his office and would repair and clean VCRs. I mean, I think that's what he did. It was hard to tell in the smoke. But one thing I remembered is that he always used Hot Dog the movie, like as a test tape. And for some reason, it was always the hot tub scene. Anyway, of course, there was also odd repairs. Mostly what you'd see a lot of is crayons and food. Kids just loved to feed the robot head, you know, the VCR. So many parents probably had to pay $20 because their kids shoved their shark bites into the Zenith. You know what I mean. Anyway, one day, I heard my dad shout from the back of the shop, and I walked past the other man's office, thick with cigarette smoke, to find my dad standing back away from the VCR. So I asked, what happened? And he said, they startled me. I remember turning my head slowly and looking at the VCR and thinking, is it slugs? Because I just watched Night of the Creeps. And I guess it could also be slugs, because I also just watched Slugs. And he shined a bright light into the door of the VCR, and from behind the head emerged two long antenna. I quickly let the door close, and my dad lifted off the top, and there scurrying around to hide were about six cockroaches, like as big as I'd seen in the movies. Not as big as slugs, but you get what I'm saying. It was terrifying. And no doubt, this VCR wasn't all that needed to be cleaned in this person's house. It was definitely infested. Which brings me to this episode. The film is of unknown origin, my guest, an exterminator, and this is VHS. Hello, and welcome to VHS. I'm your host, Dirk Marshall, and I'm joined in the studio today by James Brooks, an exterminator. Welcome.
Hello.
Thank you for being here, first and foremost. I know that it's your Friday.
It's a double Friday.
It's a double Friday.
Yeah, two weeks straight.
Wait, what do you mean?
So, we're understaffed right now, and this is actually very common in the extermination world.
Yeah.
You work all the time.
Okay.
And so we cover weekends, we do a lot of wildlife, and basically my schedule is 12 days on, 2 days off, regular week,
okay,
regular weekend, then back into the 12-day stretch.
Oh, so this is the end of the 12 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's always like my equivalent of climbing Everest.
Yeah.
I'm here, I have a beer,
right,
something fun.
Okay, perfect. Now, you have little online identity, so if anyone has questions or comments or wants to share stories about this episode and conversation, you can do so at vh-us.com, and I'll be sure to get you anything of interest. And I'd like to start, before we get to the movie, to mention how we met, because before we were brought together by this film, we were brought together by something far grosser, and that was a dead rat. So my wife and I had just bought our dream home, and we were standing in it with the realtor, you know, with the keys for the big, like, reveal, first time in there. And I was looking down the hallway, and I see a fat, disgusting rat waddle from the bathroom to what would be my daughter's playroom. And I sort of paused, and I, like, rubbed my eyes, like, it's so weird that this is my dream home, and it's going to come with something disgusting like this. So I go to the playroom, and there's nothing in there. So then I think I'm just crazy. So we go, you know, we leave, and the packing process begins and everything, and we go to move in, and there is, like, rat droppings, and it looks like the rat tried to climb a curtain and just shit all down the curtain. It was really gross. And so I had previously worked at a school that had a mouse infestation, so I was used to cleaning up these kind of things. So I got the proper chemicals and things, took care of business, but we didn't see the rat. And so we looked and looked, and the rat was never seen again. A couple days later, an aroma arrives in the house, and it was pretty unsavory. And we feared that perhaps the rat had perished in the home. So I just went to the internet, and I just searched, and the company that you work for popped up. And I made a call to a very friendly man, who I think is Luke.
Correct.
Shout out to Luke. And
he's going to love that.
And moments later, I'm not sure how long, but it wasn't long, you arrived at the door. And so you walked in, and I began to regale you with a wonderful tale that we had concocted where there was goats and chickens from the previous people. Once they were removed, the rats that lived there had a need for food, and they had wandered into the house when the previous people were moving out, and there was a rat, you know, or rats now in the home because of this weird timing of the doors being open, which you stopped me at that moment and said, I'm getting a lot of decomposition right here.
Which is notable, as I have a terrible sense of smell.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's probably helpful.
It works to my advantage in some cases, not so much in others. But if I have to stop someone short because it stinks of death,
yes,
and there's definitely something going on.
Oh, yeah, and that was death, for sure.
Yeah.
And then you and another gentleman, because I think you were maybe training someone.
I was training Justin.
Awesome. Shout out to Justin. And then you went around and began an investigation. And this was interesting to me because I've never met exterminators before. I've never had the process done for a home or commercial kitchen like we have. So to see... Like, you always think of just the exterminator part and not the investigator part.
Well, I think most people have a very finite vision of what an exterminator is or what they do. And I think more often than not, it's, you know, John Goodman in Arachnophobia.
Right, yes.
It's some sort of, you know, hyperbolic, just skewed version of, you know, some dipshit.
Yes.
Just going around spraying poison all over the place. And it's, you know, if you're good at what you do, it's far from that. And
right.
It's all about observation and really getting into the nooks and crannies of a home and, you know, playing 20 questions with a customer.
Right.
I mean, it's all about digging to figure out what the root is, how I can get to it, and, you know, what's the best route to solve it.
Right. And you found like a hole in the flashing of the house, or
there was no flashing.
Right.
There was just an open, just gap underneath the threshold of your back door. Very simple fix, really standard form fit. 1x2 L flashing just took care of that, and I'd stake my reputation that it is intact and fully functional.
Yeah, and we've had no issues ever since working with you at this home. And that also like shocked me, not that there weren't issues, but that you not only like found the problem, but then you were just like, and I'll just fix it really quickly right here, and then you won't have problems in the future. I was like, that seemed above and beyond, like, and again, not knowing what an exterminator does, that seems, you know, an impressive
range. It's not always that simple.
Sure.
I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, you were a hard 1.5.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. I like that because then there's victory. Perfect. I'm sure you meet other people, not always under the stench of dead rodents.
Yes, there are other scenarios that,
right,
that unfold.
Okay. Good, because it was pretty unpleasant.
But it is a common one.
Okay, got it. But the reason we're brought together today isn't necessarily to talk about dead rodents. It's because we are talking about a film, and that film is Of Unknown Origin. Of Unknown Origin. It's very difficult to say fast. Was this a first-time view for you?
It was.
Awesome. Great. And upon rewatching it, I was thinking I could have picked a better Exterminator movie, being that the Exterminator is not the best portrayed person in the film.
Right. And that's something that I have to deal with on a daily basis, is trying to kind of gain the trust of my customers.
Yeah.
Just because, like I said before, there's a lot of misconceptions out there. You know,
yes.
People just kind of fly by night, or crooks, or they don't care, they're inept,
right,
you know, whatever. But I'd be curious for more suggestions on
better exterminator.
Well,
movies.
And then when I reached out to you with just the idea before having a show or anything, it just because you were one of three people that popped up in my head when I came up with the idea for the program, as like, oh, I have to speak to these people. And so I didn't even know if you'd be interested. In the first conversation, you were like, I told you the film, and you said, oh, yeah, I love Peter Weller. He's great in Naked Lunch, but also played in Exterminator. And I was like, okay, stop talking, because this needs to be part of the conversation that we'll have.
Which I think is, while not the most accurate portrayal of an Exterminator's
right.
day-to-day life, I mean, most of us don't shoot up bug dust.
Right.
because, one, that doesn't really exist anymore. And
But there was bug dust at some point.
Yeah, it still exists.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. We occasionally will use it for bed bug treatments, going into light fixtures, things where, you know, liquid would be a bad idea
sure.
around
right.
you know, flammable
oh,
materials.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Hmm. Yes, so first time view for you, which is great. For me, it was also a first time view because in every October, my wife and I do 31 and 31, which is a different horror movie every night through October. A lot of people do this. And then I theme it like video stores. Like I grew up in a mom and pop video store, and a lot of times in those stores they would have different themed shelves and things, you know, like nunsploitation or spaghetti westerns or aquatic horror or whatever. So I always do a different theme to force me to watch different films so that I don't just watch my same favorites every month, because I can always squeeze those in. So some of those last year I did Heavy Metal Monday, Tuesday, which was just sequels, Witchy Wednesdays, Creatures Day, which is a stretch, but it got in creature features for Thursdays, Fitness Friday, which is just fitness horror, and then Ratter Day, and then Slasher Sunday. It's Saturday or Sunday, is one of those is going to be slashers because there's so many of them. But Ratter Day brought me to Of Unknown Origin, and I never watched it because the cover has the two main characters and then a rip in the picture. And so growing up, I just thought it was a divorce movie. Turns out it's not, but it may be.
it had some undertones.
Yeah.
The subtext of the movie was a man failing his wife.
Yeah, it's very strange. I didn't even pick up on it until the end. And then Sarah just turned and she's like, is this all an allegory for their marriage? And I was like, whoa.
Because it wasn't quite that deep.
I was super into the rat thing, so I didn't pick up on that. But yeah, so that brings us to Of Unknown Origin. The synopsis is a man becomes destructively obsessed with killing a dangerous rat, which has taken residence in his recently renovated house. It's pretty accurate.
Pretty spot on.
Yep. And at the time of this recording, you can rent the movie at Movie Madness. The Blu-ray is available from Shout Factory, or you can stream it on Amazon Prime, Google Play, and I think Shudder. So that it's not too hard to find, which is great. Being the best of the rat horror movies I watched this year. To put the film in context, we'll just talk a little bit about some of the players and some of the things that they've accomplished, and hopefully this will direct people to other films to see. The director, George P. Cosmatos, he's the father of Panos Cosmatos that did Mandy and Under the Black Rainbow. George directed Escape to Athena in 1979, Of Unknown Origin in 83, Rambo First Blood 2 in 1985, which is a very confusing title, Leviathan in 1989, and Tombstone in 1993. So a lot of films that I had seen somehow had missed Of Unknown Origin.
What a wide gamut of
I know. Very impressive. I kind of want to watch them all and just kind of see what the sort of cohesive thread is.
Right, is there some sort of underlying tone?
Yeah. The film was written by Brian Taggart. He did Of Unknown Origin in 1983, The New Kids in 85, Wanted Dead or Alive in 87, and Poltergeist 3 in 1988. The cinematographer is René Verzier. Did Rabid in 77, Death Ship in 80, Deadly Eyes in 82, which is another rat horror movie that he followed with Of Unknown Origin. So he did back-to-back rat horror movies.
He must have had a terrible rat.
I know, seriously. Yeah. And I kind of want to watch those two back-to-back now because I did watch them this year, but they're very different films. One has one rat, and the other one has dogs wearing rat costumes, which is very interesting.
then breaking.
I should be taking notes. Yeah, on, I know. Right? I mean, nunsploitation, fitness horror, yes. Dogs wearing rat costumes. I know. I mean, I'm absolutely intrigued.
We've covered a lot. And then I'm just picking that was just a couple faves for Rene. He did tons of work. The editor is Roberto Silvi, edited Piranha 2 The Spawning, which is a James Cameron directed film, which is interesting. Avon and Origin in 83, Leviathan in 89, Twister in 89, and Tombstone in 1990. So a lot of great editing credits there. Which brings us to the star, Peter Weller. I love him.
You know him. You love him.
He's so great.
He's not just a RoboCop.
No, far more than that. He did Butch and Sundance, The Early Days in 79, which was the prequel to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Shoot the Moon in 82 with Albert Finney. Avon and Origin in 83. This is credited as his first leading role. I think he does a fantastic job. And right after that was Adventure of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension in 1984. Firstborn in 84, A Killing Affair 86, and then, of course, RoboCop in 87. Maury Shaken is in this film. Fantastic actor. He's in Death Hunt in 81, War Games in 83, Avon and Origin in 83, DEF CON 4 in 84, Meatballs 3 Summer Job in 1986.
How that didn't win an Oscar, I'll never know.
I don't know. Wild Thing in 87, Twins in 88, Dances with Wolves in 90, My Cousin Vinny in 1992, Mouse Hunt 97, just to name some of the films. I'm sure if you don't know who Maury Shaken is, if you watch any of those, you'll see a great character actor stand out, and he's definitely worth watching. Shannon Tweed is the next person here. She did Falcon Crest from 82 to 83. Avon and Origin is 83, so I think it's her first film role. Hot Dog the Movie in 1984. Meatballs 3 Summer Job, 1986.
There's a lot of crossover between the
cast. She got to work with
Maury
again, which is pretty amazing. Dragnet in 87, she's uncredited. And then Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death in 1989, which stars Bill Maher. Yes, that Bill Maher. Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death.
A taut political thriller, I'm sure.
Yes, very deep. The title's probably longer than the movie. Lawrence Dane is the last person I'm mentioning, a real serious player in sort of a cult and horror. Clown Murders in 76, Rituals in 77, Scanners in 81, which also had Louis Del Grande, who plays the plumber Cleet in this film. He's credited as the first scanner. And that was definitely a VHS cover in my dad's store that scared me. Like, it wasn't something I was drawn to. I looked at that image of the guy with the veins popping out, and I was just, like, terrified of what this movie could actually be. Of course, I loved it. Happy Birthday to Me in 81, Of Unknown Origin in 83, Rolling Vengeance in 1987, which I recommend. It's about a man who builds an 8-ton monster truck for revenge. Yeah, it's that.
Like Truckosaurus?
So, kind of. It's just a really cool truck. It's like... If you remember,
that didn't actually exist. That was a Simpsons thing, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. But
filmed,
like,
by Marlon Brando.
Yes.
Voiced by Marlon Brando.
Yeah. But there's, like, a thing in the 80s where it was like you could make a movie or TV show just by making something cool. Like, just like Knight Rider, you know, it's like, he's got a cool car. It talks.
Or,
like,
that's the basis,
yeah,
of
like
the entire
Blue
plot.
Thunder, or, you know, a monster truck. You're just, why are you watching this show? Well, the monster truck's fantastic, so...
Say no more.
Yeah, and then he did Darkman 2 in 95 and Bride of Chucky in 98. So those are just some of the things that all of these people had worked on in their time. And of Unknown Origin was one of those projects. And so I just want to walk through some of the beats of the film. Starting off with the first thing we get is we get rat vision, which is something that my wife absolutely loves in movies, probably from the movie The Crow. You get a ton of crow vision in that movie, and so anytime we see from the point of view of an animal, we'll tap the other one if they're, like, not really paying attention, and be like, hey, look, you know, rat,
this is it.
Rat vision. And then we see from the point of view of the rat, and it's peeking through blinds, watching Peter Weller leave the house. Which brings me to my first question for you regarding rats. Do they keep track of us in our house, or are they just, like, existing?
They are aware of our presence, mm-hmm. in a sense. You know, typically, while rats are almost synonymous with mankind,
yeah.
Rats will follow where the people are. They want nothing to do with us.
Got it.
They're incredibly skittish. If you ever see a rat, they're going to be 10 times more scared than you are of them. So they will confine themselves into the deepest, darkest recesses of your home, as you found out
right, when
the rat died in the most inaccessible area.
Yeah,
possible.
Couldn't get to
wall
it.
Voids and attics and crawl spaces and insulation and burrows underneath your visqueen vapor barrier. They are, if nothing else, persistent, cunning, and adaptive to wherever they may be.
Okay. Not involved in the movie, but I do have to ask. We trimmed a tree out in front of our house because we were told we would get roof rats if we didn't. Those are just squirrels, right?
Or squirrels are, you know, poor imposters of roof rats.
Yes. There's a version of rat that it goes for roofs?
Yeah, it's actually quickly becoming the most common rat that we see in the greater area of Portland.
Whoa.
Southeast Portland has always been a hot spot, at least as long as I've been doing this, 12 years total. They are incredibly agile. They're a smaller, smarter rat. They have an extremely long tail that adds to their balance.
Okay.
Their dexterity is just amazing. I mean, they're like Spider-Men out in the wild. They can scale the sheer side of a building. They can go up telephone pole and cross the wires. They'll travel up on trees. Oftentimes, they may never even set foot on the ground.
What?
Their habits are changing wildly, quickly. We see them coming in underneath homes. We see them coming in up above. And they can fit through holes the size of a quarter.
Whoa.
So it's really like a needle in a haystack trying to figure out where these things have gotten in. And they're incredibly persistent and pervasive.
That's crazy. I feel like I need a button I can push that just says, like, myth debunked every time I say something that...
I just want that for life.
Yeah, it's just... I just always assume they just came from the sewer and they don't do anything else, like, nature-wise or...
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking how many different varieties of rats there are. I mean, they you know, are hands down one of the most successful species on the planet.
Are most of your calls you receive rat-related, or do you get more, like, spiders and... cockroaches and, or is there just a general?
I'd say rats are probably 70%
of
what I do. It seems to be kind of my specialty. I seem to have
you're a rat specialist
knack for finding these just hard to get to and difficult jobs that you know, a lot of companies don't even want to deal with it.
Sure.
Just because there's a lot of liability, they are extremely difficult to trap. You know, there are ramifications when using poison.
Mm-hmm.
And they never go away.
Right.
They're just always around. I mean, we come out to your house every 3 months and you know, those stations are picked clean.
Yeah.
Every single time. So they're still around, but we've successfully blocked them off.
Right. Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
The other thing that you see a lot in people's homes every year with the weather is people get sugar ants.
Yes, the odorous house ant.
Are there really smelly ants, or there's just the odorous one? Is that they
smell terrible?
Oh, they do.
Yeah,
but
they're
not odorous. Wait, odorless is what I'm saying.
Odorous.
Oh, so worse. They're very bad smelling.
Yeah,
ants.
Yeah. They liken it to a rotten coconut.
Okay.
Which I've never had the pleasure of smelling a rotten coconut.
So was there an ant commission that was like, we need to spin this from odorous ant to sugar ant, or?
All ants are attracted to sugar.
Okay.
But it actually makes up a very small percentage of what their day-to-day diet is. That's starvation food.
Okay.
That's not what they want or need to survive long-term, but in the cold, wet months, which we get a lot of here, they are going to stay inside. Their food sources outside are limited or non-existent, and they will go for whatever's available.
Yeah, because at our old house, I would notice that they would come in, seem like the same path every year over like a windowsill and towards the kitchen, but like...
And they follow their own pheromone trails.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, if that never gets washed away, they're going to continue to follow that path.
Got it.
They're incredibly instinctual. And, I mean, they are probably the top organism.
on planet Earth.
So if you see them, cleaning would be a priority.
Yes, I mean, that's part of it.
I mean, it's not going to keep them away.
No, they are the pest that not only I or my company or my peers, just everyone struggles with this ant.
Yeah.
They have multiple queens, multiple nests. They're incredibly nomadic. They're constantly moving their nests around. They, on average, spend about 2 weeks in one given spot, and then they move around.
Wow.
So they are the bane of my existence. Because I can't install some L flashing to keep them out.
Right, right. Well, we've lucked out. That's not an issue here. So your services keep our home safe. So thank you.
Absolutely.
The next thing in the film is we're introduced that Peter Weller, playing Bart Hughes, really cares for his home. He's remodeled everything. It's very nice. And then we get more rat vision. And first we get a silhouette of a rat head on the wall. And it's, because it's a silhouette, it's monstrously huge.
It was startling.
Yes. And then you're just like, whoa, what is this movie? And then we get these shots that we see throughout the film, which are these paws and its hair and its tail, seemingly through a glass table. And it's like, looks like it's covered in Vaseline. It's very gross.
It's like if Chuck E. Cheese developed a crack problem.
Yeah.
And just really let himself go.
It's really disgusting. Are rats naturally just oily creatures, or is this one of those liberties the director's taking to make the monster seem even worse?
Yes, they are very greasy. The technical term is sebum, the oily residue that all mammals create, even us.
Oh.
It's the same deal, but most people shower on a regular basis. Rats are actually extremely clean by nature.
Hmm.
But due to environmental circumstances and just what's around them, they have had to migrate to less than desirable situations. So if you've ever had a pet rat as a kid, like as in a classroom or friends, they spend all day cleaning themselves. You know, under the right circumstances, they're probably one of the cleanest animals you'll come across.
Whoa.
But their numbers just grow to such severity that they are forced to live in their own squalor, urine, and defecation.
Ugh. Well, that is disgusting.
Yes.
Next question is, do plumbers have beefs with exterminators? And the reason I mention it is because Plumber Cleet says an exterminator is for old ladies and people who don't like to get their hands dirty.
I wouldn't say that I've ever encountered a specific beef with the plumbing sector.
Okay.
But the caveat, I do, and this might be anecdotal, might be like my own misperceptions, but I feel like extermination, while it very much is a trade, it is probably the least respected trade.
And why is that?
Going back to the misconceptions, I mean, I think that it's, something like we're just spraying ant spray that you can buy at the store. Like, we're ripping people off.
Right.
You know, while it takes, and I'm sure that there are a lot of companies out there and a lot of inept technicians from coast to coast, no doubt. But we meticulously go to seminars, we're constantly educating ourselves. I mean, this is a constant process. And it's in your own best interest to just know what you're doing, what you're talking about, go that extra mile.
The thing that I thought was pretty interesting is, like I said, the detective aspect of it, that you were all looking for. You're like sort of like trackers in a way, because something has been there. And then you're like, where did it come from? Where did it go? What is it doing? What's it eating on? What's bringing it here?
Who, what, where, when, why?
Right.
That's what I live by.
It's pretty amazing, considering I previously just thought the person just showed up and just sprayed stuff around the outside of the house and was like, okay, you won't have any spiders or whatever it is, you know?
And while that is an aspect of the job, I mean, some of it can be routine and fairly monotonous, but especially when you're dealing with mammals, rodents, wildlife, whatever, anyone can spray some poison or set some traps. But if you're not getting to the underlying root of the issue, you know, what's causing them to be here? What can we do to rectify that? You're never really going to get the problem solved.
Right. No, that makes sense. That brings us to a part where they say in the film that there are five ways to kill a rat. Trap them, poison him, knock him on the head, gas him, or shoot him. Does that pretty much cover it? Or, I mean, I'm sure you're not allowed to shoot rats.
I mean, I could get way more creative
right.
than that. Crucifixion,
right.
fire. You know, I could just guilt them to death.
Right. It would be pretty amazing if someone just saw you walking around their home with a flamethrower.
I do have one, actually.
No, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
That's one of my problems with the 80s is, like, it made it seem like I was probably going to get a chance to shoot a flamethrower at some point.
On your hoverboard.
In, like, every action movie, they're just like, flamethrower. And then I've looked up online, and I just couldn't find anywhere where you're allowed to just shoot flamethrowers.
You know, I actually got it from my father, so I couldn't really speak to as to where he got it or how much it costs, but essentially it's just a large wand attached to a propane tank.
Yeah.
And,
well, my dad has a small version of that. But he burnt down their hedges, so I don't think he's allowed to use it anymore.
Yeah, there's very few appropriate uses for a flamethrower.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it for the general public.
Right. Yeah. So trapping, do you do like live traps and stuff like that for a rat situation, or is that something larger, like a raccoon or something?
You can, and I have. I worked for a larger company in my early 20s. And that was how we approached it. We actually didn't use pesticide at all.
Okay, sure.
We would live trap the roof rats. But then you're coming out a couple times a day for, you know, 2 weeks.
Right.
Picking up animals, and that's extremely expensive.
Sure.
For the customer to have to shell out
right.
all that money. I mean, if you're having to go to their house every day, it's just not really a viable approach to that situation. It can be effective. You know, snap trapping is another way.
What is a snap trap?
A snap trap is like what you think of as like a rat trap.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, yeah, that's
the just one like you see in Looney
wooden,
Tunes. And
wooden
everything.
Board, yeah, yeah. Just, you know, a little piece of cheese on it.
Sure.
While cheese is not really the appropriate bait.
Because, that's not the thing.
Well, I mean, you know, rats will eat almost anything. I mean, they are the definition of a true omnivore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'll cannibalize one another if necessary. But we're the only mammal that eats another animal's milk.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Rats aren't like...
Yeah, it's not something that they would... there's no nutritional value
yeah.
in that for them.
Well, and the aging of the milk would be a difficult process for rats, probably.
I mean, they're pretty smart, but... it's probably a few millennia out for them.
Right.
Hopefully.
I hope so. Yeah. I don't need any competition in the farmers markets with these rats. after Peter Weller visits the plumber, he becomes pretty much single-mindedly focused on killing this rat. Now, he is a novice. He's not an exterminator. And so he's trying a variety of things throughout the film, some more questionable than others. Such as the part with the metal traps, where he is now going around putting metal traps down in his house because the snap traps didn't work. The rat chewed through them. And there's a part where he chops the head off his kid's doll with the metal trap, which I have to imagine the kid's going to come home and be like, what the hell, Dad? Like, what?
Oh, and it gets so much worse.
Like, you couldn't use celery or something? And then in one of my favorite quotes, Peter Weller says, watch and weep, you furry fuck. And the rat is
his
watching him say it.
His one-liners in the movie were just priceless.
It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, he's just like a straight-up like pulp novel,
yes.
like detective
yeah.
film from the 50s. I mean, it's just the vernacular that he chooses to use, not only in that movie,
yeah.
but in pretty much out his whole career.
All of them, yeah. It's Scanners and everything. Screamers. Yeah, and he has such a... I've always really appreciated Peter Weller because he has this... sort of, not I don't want to say wooden in a bad way, but a very subtle manner of being.
He's stoic.
Yeah, the way he says things. And even in interviews about films and stuff, I always listen to the bonus features if he's in the film because his talking about, like, say, the movements of RoboCop and things, it's utterly fascinating. And you're just like, God, this guy is like, he is like a jazz musician. He's doing all these nuanced, subtle things that most people won't even pick up on. So he's always a real pleasure to watch, I think.
He's a cool cat.
Yeah, super cool. Which is another cool thing about the film is the next scene he goes to do the research at the library, and he actually did that research, and that's why that scene exists in the movie. he told George Cosmatos about the research he was doing, and George said, we got to shoot that. So we have all these grotesque films he's watching where, like, rats are eating their tails and showing people's faces where the rat has eaten their nose or something. So say I'm sleeping in my bed, and a rat enters the room. What are the chances it's going to eat my nose?
I would give you $1 million if that happened.
If I trained the rat to eat my nose, or if it was just an innocent rat that wanted to eat my nose?
A single rat would not behave in that manner.
Got it.
If you were dealing with an infestation and there was little to no food sources around and you were, for whatever reason, incapacitated or bound, then sure, they might.
So a plague.
Tear you flesh.
Wow.
But in my grasp of rat history behavior is so finite to what we deal with here.
Yeah.
I mean, there are thousands of varieties of rats from you know, across the world. So
a rat in my home is not going to attack me.
No, like I said before, they're far more scared of you than you are of them.
Myth debunked.
That's
what we need to say. I like that sound too. Should add that. So that brings us to one of my favorite scenes in this entire movie. And this feels like a tight little movie to me. It's not like, I don't think there was a big budget or anything, but it also feels very streamlined. Like, there's no fat on it. It's very like, this happens, then this happens, then this happens. There's a reason to it all. And for me, one of those reasons is the dinner party scene. And Peter Weller delivers a fantastic monologue, and I'm putting this clip up on the website so everyone can see it. And it's all about rats. He's consumed. He's taken over basically a dinner party to talk about what he wants to talk about. Should be like a business event. And he's spiraled so much into the hunting of this rat that he does this whole...
Sorry, I forgot about that.
He launches like a musical cue for me. He launches in a whole speech about rats and how you can't destroy them and how prolific they are and how disgusting. And I just wanted to, having now a chance to speak with someone who has come face to face with these creatures, it seemed factually accurate, the things he was saying.
Everything in the film was accurate. I think some of it might have been a little hyperbolic. I mean, there was a particular stat in the movie where I think it was like three rats could turn into a million
in
3 years,
something like that.
Something close, which, I mean, under ideal circumstances with absolutely no predators or prey.
It also seems kinky that he chose three rats. Like, normally you'd just be like, two rats, but one of those rats brought a friend into the
That's
situation.
A Garden of Eden I can get on board with.
It's just weird. I mean, four makes, but three? Okay.
Well, you know, rats certainly do not practice monogamy.
Oh, well, that's an important thing for rats.
But back to that scene.
Yeah.
He just delivers it in such a deadpan, morose fashion.
Yes.
He's just so preoccupied. I mean, it has this tangent of, you know, like Moby Dick.
Mm-hmm.
He's going after that white whale.
Yeah.
He's completely consumed. I think that was the part of the movie that I resonated with the most. Because I've been in that scenario.
Oh, really?
Where you've tried everything and you're getting outsmarted by, you know, a stupid rat.
Right.
And while, you know, they are far from stupid.
Right.
But I would like to think that I have more cognition.
Right.
I could outsmart a rat. But,
yeah.
Sometimes it can be all-consuming.
Yeah. My wife's old job, she did social work, and her boss had a drawer with a bunch of candy in it. And one day she went in there and she's talking with one of the clients, and the kid's like, I smell a dead rat. And she's like, oh, well, we thought it smelled weird in here, but we didn't know, like, really what the smell was. And he's like, no, trust me, at the previous home I lived in, there was rats, it's a dead rat. And she's like, okay. So they started looking around, they pull open the drawer, and there's half of a dead rat. It had crawled partway through the back of a drawer to eat the candy, ate the candy, and then couldn't get back through the hole and had just died there.
I thought he'd maybe gnawed off the other half.
Like, oh, no, no. It was just like stuck in the hole, which is disgusting. But
yeah, I've certainly seen that.
Ugh, you've seen some things.
Yeah, wouldn't recommend it.
So then after that moment, he finally calls an exterminator. So we finally get to an exterminator in the film. And the exterminator, he doesn't go to the house.
He never shows up.
It's a terrible presentation.
They have this whole scene where he leaves the money out for him, but then I felt like they kind of just breezed over that.
Like,
what happened?
Not only will the exterminator not investigate, but they're not even going to show up to actually do the service.
Well, and you know, apparently in early 80s New York, you know, I don't know if they were in the Bowery or what.
Right.
Which is like war torn.
Yes. I was just
New York. And it's like, yeah, you can't get an exterminator. They just can't happen.
And he says there's two types of poison. One makes them bleed and the other makes them thirsty. Is that sort of how the two, are there two types of poison? Or I'd imagine there's probably more.
There are two that I'm aware of. We exclusively use anticoagulants, which are a blood thinner.
Okay.
You know, back then it was warfarin, which, you know, humans ingest, you know, probably millions of humans as a blood thinner for heart problems.
Oh, okay.
But that's essentially how it works is, you know, they ingest the poison, thins out their blood, and they basically just bleed out internally.
Ugh.
The thirst myth, as I call it, is I've never heard anything factually based in that. I think that it's something that exterminators tell their customers.
Right.
That it's like, oh yeah, they'll get thirsty and they'll go off and die outside. And you know what, not that they wouldn't do that, but there's nothing in the chemical formula that would make them thirstier than they typically would be.
Right. It's just the myth to make people feel better.
That's my own perception. I've never really gotten any concrete facts on that.
Yeah. We had a possum when I was a kid that was terrorizing our backyard, apparently. So a family friend put a live trap out and caught the possum, but then he was out of town for like 4 days. And so I was like disturbed that the possum was just going to suffer out there. And it had just been the holidays. So in our fridge, I found a bunch of little triangle foil wrapped cheeses that you get in like a variety pack with like a summer sausage as like a holiday gift, And it's disgusting. And so I was like, I'll feed this to the possum. And so I'd go out there and it would hiss at me and I would press the foiled cheese through the grid. And then
did you not take the foil off?
No, I did. Okay. I definitely did. I did. That was like what was protecting my fingers in my mind. But anyway, so yeah, I fed a possum disgusting cheese for 3 days. And then the man showed up and took the trap and he said he released it into the wild. And I mean, that probably didn't happen. That was more just like,
he's at a farm upstate.
Yeah, exactly. Let the kid be like, oh yeah, he's a very happy cheese fed possum. Yeah. Good job, strange little boy.
He's got his cheese as far as the eye can see.
So happy. He'd never had cheese, you know, like the rats. Oh gosh!
And to finish that thought, the second poison that's available is a neurotoxin.
Okay,
and that's what you'll find most consistently with over-the-counter products like Decon, and where that essentially scrambles their brain in layman's terms. I mean, I'm sure I could probably get more in depth with it, but even I probably don't have a full grasp on how that works because I've personally never used it, but from personal experience, they seem almost drunk. They're confused and disoriented. I'd say 90% of the time when I deal with a customer who has tried to deal with it themselves and use products like this, they almost inevitably will die in a wall somewhere or just somewhere that you can't get to. It happens. It's a risk that you use with poison, but beware of neurotoxins.
Yeah, that's a good thing to be aware of.
Yeah. The EPA has been trying to ban it for decades.
Why can't they ban something that's a neurotoxin? Is there serious Decon money?
Lobby.
Oh, wow.
Special interest.
Okay. Well, that makes sense this day.
I'm sure Monsanto has something to do with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Okay, this brings me to the next horrific thing. So I think I just moved away from home, and my dad regaled me with a terrifying story, and that story is something that occurs in this film, and that involves a rat coming up out of a toilet. And so it came up out of the toilet, scared my mom, went back down the toilet, then came out of the toilet upstairs in their house. And he got a shovel, and then he tried to beat the rat to death.
In the toilet?
In the toilet.
Oh.
This is the crazy part.
A wreck on your porcelain.
Well, it didn't break the toilet somehow, but he eventually pinned the rat underwater, and it drowned. This all took place in a toilet.
Brutal.
Yeah, I know. I apologize for all the listeners.
But PETA is going to go nuts over this. Your dad's in serious trouble.
I'm so sorry. It was a long time ago, so maybe the statute of limitations has passed. But
I'll have to bone up on my rat drowning law.
Yes, I know. Jeez. But I didn't remember the end part of the story. I thought he broke the toilet with a shovel in my mind. So I asked him last week, and he regaled me again with the exact same story. So that is what happened. So my question to you is, can a rat at any point swim out of our toilet?
Absolutely.
No!
Yes.
Oh, unfortunate myth not debunked.
Truth.
Oh, no.
It does happen. It doesn't happen as much anymore. The city of Portland has, I'm sure you probably know, living in Southeast, has done a massive effort to update and fix their archaic sewer system that was 75 years old. And that it's actually worked fantastically. Unless you have a break in your sewer line, it's probably not going to happen. I certainly wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
But right.
It does happen. I do get calls. I get maybe one a year where that happens. And, sometimes they come out and they get disoriented and can't find their way back in.
Oh,
but more often than not, they took a wrong turn at Albuquerque and they're just going to go right back from where they came.
Oh, so
I don't know if I've ever felt more empathy for someone than someone who's dealt with that.
Yeah.
Because, can you imagine going to the bathroom after physically being in that situation where, you're doing something that every human has done every day for their entire life. And then to have just one of the most startling experiences.
It's a nightmare. And then the idea that it could happen at any point is even worse.
Yeah, I've heard worse, like snakes coming up through toilets. And
nope.
Yeah, see, that's where I would lose my shit.
Oh, my God.
Rats don't bother me in the slightest, but, you show me a little garter snake and I'm going to, hightail it.
What? Okay, this would have to be like in snake country, right? Some state that has just too many snakes. Australia?
No. There's...
In Oregon, a snake has come out of someone's toilet?
Yeah.
Have you dealt with a snake that came out of somebody's toilet?
No, I've just heard of this. but, people let snakes go. People buy like a python as a pet, and then it grows much larger than they had anticipated, and they just flush the stuff down. I mean, it's like that kind of true urban legend of alligators in the sewers in the 50s when, people were selling them as pets.
And shit, geez.
Like, what am I going to do with this thing? Like, old school abortion, I guess.
Man.
Flush it down the toilet.
That is terrifying. Toilet snakes. There's a movie. I'm going to look it up. I'm pretty sure there probably is a toilet snake movie.
Snakes on a plane.
Right.
So.
Snakes in a drain.
Yeah.
There you go. It's possible.
You think Samuel L. Jackson would sign off on it?
Yeah, he might at this point. He doesn't care. He'll do whatever. So then we have another allusion to, like you were talking about, with the Ahab and the whale, or is that right? Ahab and the whale?
Yes.
That is right. Yeah. Okay. Because then Peter Weller is like banging on the wall, and the book is Moby Dick, and we get a nice little close-up on the Moby Dick book. So we're like, okay, he's like wearing all of it. Cosmatos is just like, look, this is what I'm doing. It's a man hunting the whale. Like, it's all...
It lacked a little subtlety, but yes. I don't know if he really needed to pan into the book.
And then we get lots of shots in the movie where Peter Weller is like stacking books up against things, and he's hanging in a hammock over his bed, and then the rat's chewing through the ceiling above him. By and large, the rat wouldn't really be going after him. The rat doesn't want to take over his giant brick home, right?
Right. But this was a particularly motivated and psychotic rat that seemed to have a taste for human blood, which led to a very violent interaction between said rat and Peter Weller.
And during that,
he
encounters the babies of the rat. So then we discover it's a female rat.
And so
then,
cute.
And then they say, and the rats, of course, the babies fall into the sewer, which is just going to make more sequels of Unknown Origin, I imagine, because those rats are going to come into houses.
They're really caught up in post-production right now. Yes. So yeah. It's going to be killer when it comes out.
Yeah, after all the Avengers movies, it'll just be like seven sequels.
We're done with comic books. Yep. Now it's all rat horror films.
Moving on. But they say that earlier, if you encounter this rat, just be glad that it's not a female rat because they're twice as vicious as male rats. Is that true? Have you noticed a difference?
Well,
depending on the gender of the rat,
male rats will come in and cannibalize the young.
Okay,
but a female,
they sound charming.
Yes, which is a surprisingly consistent trait.
Wow.
With the things that I deal with.
And yeah,
raccoons will do this.
Raccoons eat their babies?
The males will.
What? Why?
Yeah. They're probably delicious.
Well, yeah, that is the problem.
I have a theory. I mean, the cuter an animal it is, you know, the more delicious.
I mean, not to continually gross and upset people with this episode, but I did have suckling pig, and it was fantastic. I was not excited about it, and then I tasted it, and I was like, this is really good.
I don't want to like it, but I do.
So, you know, apologize to any vegan listeners of this episode who I'm sure turned this off a long time ago.
Just a hard pass on
this
one.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I respect their decision. Then the secretary comes over, and this is the weird part of the movie.
That was the only superfluous scene in the movie, just like the side love tangent.
Well, and like, if this is maybe a relationship, maybe that's what's upsetting the situation with his wife, if we're going to go in that route, which by and large, we're talking way more about it than the move does itself.
Well, I don't know if we really did touch on the emotional split between husband and wife and his weird relationship with his son.
Yeah, his son, which has a gerbil, but he's on vacation, which is the weirdest thing because I think they flew there. They took a car and then flew. I don't know. Anyway,
do you not bring your gerbil on vacation?
It's more of a home gerbil. No, we can't have gerbils, I don't think, because we have the commercial kitchen space, but that would be strange.
It's my service gerbil.
Right.
I need it for my anxiety.
People can service anything these days. It's ridiculous. You just buy a little vest online and you're like, this is my service, whatever. And like, all right, it's supposed to be helping you. You still seem like a jerk. But
what's more affectionate and comforting than a gerbil?
Right. In its little cage with its wheel.
Sisyphus pushing the rock
up a hill. The futility of life illustrated before you. But the great thing about the scene with the secretary is that she hears the rat, and then Peter Weller says, "House sounds." And he has this like this emotionless way of saying house sounds. It's so good.
I want to make that my ringtone. That was the best thing I've ever heard.
And I recommend if you get the Blu-ray, which you showed, it's beautiful, listen to the commentary, because during the commentary, it cuts back and forth between the director and Peter Weller. And during that part, Peter Weller says, "This is one of my favorite lines out of any of the things I've worked on. I just love the sound." And then he says it like two times, just house sounds. And it's just so good. Just two words.
Yeah, his creep vibe was at 11 in that scene.
Seriously.
And yet his secretary continues to shamelessly throw herself at this married man.
She's trying to...
I mean, it is Wall Street and whatever,
yes.
But you know, you got to climb that ladder, break the glass ceiling somehow.
I mean, I guess so. By this point in the movie, he's really losing whatever the thing is he's supposed to be working on.
The Johnson account.
Yeah,
they might
say something, but I can't listen to anyone talk about business ever. Like, it's just the most bored. I see like a boardroom and I'm like, nope, I'm out. Like,
it's like the adults on Peanuts.
Oh my gosh.
Just womp, 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 womp.
It's like I always wondered watching Star Wars movies. I'm like, who are the space meetings for? Like, who's the person that's like, did you see the new Star Wars? Yes, I love the scene where the four guys sat around in pajamas and had a meeting. Like, that's what is this even in the movie?
It's like, you know, I don't get enough HR meetings at work, you know?
It just doesn't make they just sit around and discuss things. Like, no one wants that. Jump around with a sword or something, or kill a giant rat.
Give the people what they want.
Exactly. So the next time we see him, he's squatting on the stairs and he's clutching his baseball bat, which I think there or right after is when he
takes the old steel trap things and he hammers it into the bat, making this really awesome weapon of destruction.
It's a menacing presence.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And he's wearing his hockey things up to his legs. I don't know what those are. Hockey leggings? I don't know what the proper term for those are.
Hockey stocking?
Yeah, hockey stocking. That's a nice alliteration. And he looks totally insane, and he's got a little hat on. She shows up, and he just tells her to leave. And then she walks outside, and I think he yells at that point, or might be mixing up two scenes. But then we see Cleet the plumber is outside, and I don't know what he's doing out there, but he's on a ladder.
Hockey stocking.
Yeah, it's just so strange. That's what hockey stocking is. This was filmed in Canada, I think, so I think they hockey sock a lot there.
Yeah.
Then he literally destroys the mini house as he vanquishes the rat. It's very symbolic as he has destroyed his own home. And again, I love all of those, like, you know, this is because of this and this is an image of that, but it's not like veiled in any way. It's all very much like he's literally beating his tiny house and destroying, you know, the water's leaking everywhere. He's killed the rat.
Well, and by his own admission, I mean, he was extremely unsatisfied with his, you know, hovel, I think
right.
he called it.
Yeah.
This is a, you know, beautiful, historic New York townhome.
Right.
You know, 3-4 stories.
Yes.
They give it a singular outside shot, and it just looks pristine.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, something that would go for millions of dollars, and it was beneath him.
Yes.
So maybe he just needed an excuse to start over.
And it's interesting, too. In the beginning of the film, he's like, the rug gets messed up and he straightens the rug, you know, and it's like any imperfection.
He was very perturbed at his 5-year-old child making the slightest mess.
Which is crazy because I have a 5-year-old and the level of destruction she can accomplish with a Triscuit is mind-boggling. It's incredible. The level of waste she can do to a room and a couch. And you're just like, that was one Triscuit? How did you?
But she didn't break your water main or...
She didn't
decapitate your favorite stuffed animal.
My wife said, because our daughter will hang, she's a beast, she will hang from the, like, anything. So doors on the fridge, those handles she kind of pulled off, the shower, the little towel rack thing. And so my wife said, if you pull the rack off the wall, I'll have to sell some of your toys and use that money to buy a new thing, right?
I love it.
We don't think it's ever going to happen. That's just something that comes out of your mouth as a parent. Today, we hear a sound, and then she is in full meltdown. She's crying. She's apologizing like she ran over somebody. And we were like, what did she do? And we walked in, and she pulled the towel rack off the wall. And she thought that her mom was really going to sell all of her toys.
What? See, there's ramifications and consequences.
It was pretty amazing.
For your actions.
So,
it's a hard lesson to learn at 5.
It was pretty sad as a parent to be like, oh, you are so miserable right now. Because you think that this is actually what's going to happen. But you also couldn't stop yourself because you're a 5-year-old.
It's very conflicting.
You had to hang from the thing. So, yeah, it was just an interesting thing that literally happened today. So there you go for all of you out there that needed to hear that information. Which brings us to any final thoughts on A Venom Origin. Anything you'd like to conclude with? Oh, the last scene we see is the wife and son show up and he wraps his arms around them. They walk inside and she says, Shannon Tweed says, what happened? And Peter Weller says, I had a party. Which, like, he kind of sounds like if he said that, I had a party, that's what the place would look
like. That's how he parties.
And you'd be like, someone's buried in here somewhere.
There's at least 3 dead hookers somewhere on the property.
Seriously.
There's a mountain of cocaine somewhere.
Yes.
Just an average night.
Yeah. None of the blood is his. Yeah. Definitely. But yeah, and then that's the end of the film. Credits roll. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It was equal parts some engaging, but also with the camp that you come to expect,
sure,
you know, in 2019, you know, watching an early 80s horror film.
83,
I don't think I'll ever grow tired of that type of film.
Yeah, I won't either. I mean, I, of course, own this. I will watch it again for sure, which brings us to a few questions about yourself. What is a good day like for an exterminator?
Where I don't get defecated on.
Sure.
I worked with kids. I had the same rule.
For me, it's all about the people I meet.
Yeah.
That by far is my greatest joy, is being able to help people, meeting interesting walks of life. I mean, from you know, people in Section 8 housing, yeah, to the wealthiest 1%. Not that either of those two, you know, goalposts are my favorite,
sure,
but, you know, opportunities to do stuff like this, you know, mm-hmm, like today I actually got to meet an old, radio DJ that I had been listening to since,
whoa,
I was a kid.
That's cool.
Yeah. That was so neat. And I, you know, I've met a lot of celebrities doing this job. And
did you tell him, like, I used to listen to you when I was a kid, and
I kind of gushed a little bit.
If I had gone back and told my child self that one day you'll kill this man's rats.
And that's exactly what I did for him. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good day for me. You know, it's fulfilling, because I feel like a lot of jobs that people have, you don't really get that satisfaction. You don't really get to see or reap the rewards of,
yeah,
what you do. And I get to do that on a daily basis. You know, okay, here's a problem. Here's how I can fix it.
Right.
I'm happy. Everything's simpatico.
And what is, this is the juicy question, a bad day like?
A bad day, I had one yesterday where I bit off a little bit more than I could chew.
Oh, no.
As far as, because I also, as you know, do home repair.
Yes.
And sometimes I get a little into the weeds with things.
Oh, I bet. Once you open something.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a carpenter. Mm-hmm. You know, you might run into problems, and, you know, everything that I'm supposed to do there is, you know, their home sales contingent upon me,
right,
doing this.
Oh,
so, you know, I mean, it's, you know, $1,100 or whatever for me to do this job, but, you know, this is like the biggest purchase or sale of their entire lives.
Oh my gosh.
And you couple that with, this time of year, we have to remove raccoon families from crawl spaces. And I think that it most certainly is the worst part.
You said this time of year?
Yeah, in springtime, you know, female raccoons will invade people's crawl spaces. They'll have their babies down,
oh,
there. And so I physically have to go down there, remove the baby raccoons, which are the cutest thing you've,
oh my,
ever,
gosh,
seen in your life.
And
they're
never,
so young, like, you have to euthanize them.
You've never tasted one?
No. they are actually pretty disgusting.
Okay.
They look cute, but,
right,
they are just saturated in shit.
So you, God, this is really going to upset some people, but how do
this
you-
This is harsh.
Yeah, how do you have to dispatch of baby raccoons?
So there are three legal forms
of euthanasia.
We are talking
about an invasive species, so.
They're technically not invasive.
Oh, okay.
Although their origins are from South America.
Right.
Tens of thousands of years ago, they took a long pilgrimage from South America,
wow,
all the way up to North America, and have succeeded beyond anyone's wildest dreams.
Right.
So the acceptable means of euthanasia are gas.
Yep.
Blunt force trauma to the head.
Oh.
Or gunshot. I can't fire a firearm in the city limits.
Mm.
When they're that young, their lung sacs are so small that the CO2 gas isn't just not effective. It will take 30 minutes.
Oh, no, it's blunt force trauma?
So you...
Oh, have, no, that's not what I would have thought it would be.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's unpleasant.
Next unpleasant question, how big is a raccoon litter?
Anywhere from 2 to 6 in a litter.
Jeez.
Average is about 4.
And the person getting charged, is it by pound or? I mean.
No, that's the butcher I sell it to.
Oh, God, that's so gross. It's a food cart, isn't it?
But I won't say which one.
Right, okay. That makes sense. So I put that out to the listeners. Try to find the raccoon meat food cart. Sure, it's artisanal. Oh, God.
It's organic.
Right. And with that in mind, something as unsavory as having to dispatch of raccoons, one has to wonder, how did you get into being an exterminator?
Well, that's a long story that I'll tell you right now.
Okay, great.
So I moved up here to Portland in 2005. I'm a musician. I had dreams or delusions of grandeur to become, you know, the next guitar god. And Portland was a great place to play music and meet like-minded people. So I did that. Obviously, I still needed a day job to get by. I was 18 years old when I came here. Floated around some cooking jobs here and there. Ended up finding myself in some really bad situations.
Yeah.
Just being sexually harassed by like my boss and having to work in completely illegal and unsanitary conditions. My paychecks were bouncing. I was just at my wit's end and, you know, 20 years old. And it's like, I'm not going home with my tail between my legs.
Yeah, yeah.
So my best and oldest friend in the world, Will, who, another shout out.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Will.
He had gotten a job with a company that had just lost like all of their employees. Somebody went and started their own business. So took everybody. So they're desperate for people. You know, you have a driver's license and like that's all you needed. And it was a pay bump. And, you know, they give you a car and a cell phone and
you're
out and about. I get to drive around and listen to music. So I was like, yeah, sure. That sounds like something I'd be game. And I actually thrived at it. So I did that for about 3.5 years. The band actually started taking off and I got signed. And
is the music something you can find online anywhere or?
That's my only online presence. Yeah,
okay. And what is the band?
Mangled Bohemians.
Mangled Bohemians.
Which, as a 32-year-old man now, I kind of regret the name, but
it
made sense.
I was not in anything that really recorded, but I did start an electro-industrial project on my own in 1992, and it was called Pen 15 because it looks like the word penis. So,
which has come full circle. I mean, they started a Hulu series.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
So
you missed the boat. I mean, that could have been your million-dollar idea.
It could have. It didn't catch on. Did a couple noise compilations. But luckily
we should trade stories on that. That's a whole different podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, we would definitely be in
it
the
really
same
is.
Line. Yeah.
This is a sidebar, but my most exciting thing was when I was on a noise compilation that was a cassette and it came wrapped in wire with dental molds holding the cassette. And apparently the person that launched the label had broken into a dentistry place and stole all the dental molds and then released them with these compilations, which I was like, this seems like a terrible way to hide a crime.
Yeah, a felonious crime at that.
Yeah, so anyway, sidebar there, but you know, there's people out there doing wild creative things. Yeah. So Mangled Bohemians.
Yes, yeah. That obviously didn't really pan out financially.
Yeah.
I had a fantastic time doing that and certainly don't regret a moment of it. But then I found this company and, you know, I work for just an incredible boss and we have a fantastic team. Obviously I'm a little biased, but I genuinely believe that we are the best company around, at least in the greater Portland area. And it's a bizarre but rewarding job.
Yeah. Well, I'd imagine every day is pretty different.
I've never had the same day twice.
Yeah. It's just got to be nice. There's something to be said about that. If you're going to work 12 days in a row, at least you know it's not going to be the same day over and over.
Yes.
I mean, that's something that killed me about my previous job I had for 10 years was that I knew on Monday it was going to be, how was your weekend? And on Tuesday, they'd be like, oh, the whole week's ahead of us if we just make it to Wednesday. And then on Wednesday, they're like, well,
did you catch King of Queens last night?
Yeah, we're halfway through. And then on Thursday, they'd be like, we almost made it to Friday. And then Friday happens, and be like, we did it! And you're like, this is, all we did was relive last week.
Just put the gun on my mouth.
Yeah, it was awful. It was so terrible and soul-crushing. What are your favorite things about being an exterminator aside from people? You've already touched on the people part. Is there part of your brain that has to solve problems or puzzles?
Oh, critical thinking.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
That is by far the best aspect of it. It just keeps your brain engaged. It's so easy to check out. You know, not to bring up 2019 again, but it's –
Yeah, there's a lot of shit going out in the world right now, and it's nice to focus on a concrete, tangible problem and come up with a creative solution.
Yeah, and be a part of something that's helping somebody.
Which oh, absolutely. And I mean, the praise that I get from people, which, not to sound too, you know, full of myself, but just having like that genuine interaction with someone and just the appreciation to do what someone was either unwilling or unable to do.
Yeah.
And coming through for them. And this is a big deal.
I
mean, you know, you personally know, I mean, having some foreign entity in your home is unsettling.
It's gross.
It's potentially hazardous to your health, and it can do, you know, untold damage to the biggest investment of your entire life, your home. And just being able to interact with them, come up with some sort of solution. I you know, aside from a couple of nut jobs, I like to think that everyone is satisfied that you know, with what I did and how I conducted myself.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's important to hold on to those compliments and those accolades, because, you know, the way our brains work, it just takes one even insane person who says something terrible to you that then we're just spiraled down into like, oh, I'm awful at this.
God, they're right. And what am I doing?
Why doesn't our brain hold on to the good stuff? I don't know, but it just doesn't.
We are hardwired to remember.
It's ridiculous. My next question was, if someone was interested in getting into your field, how would they go about doing it? And I believe you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation that there's openings at your work.
Yes, if anyone is interested, please contact us.
So we should probably say
Summit Pest Management. It's a fantastic company to work for. We full of health benefits, 401k. We pay very well. You can do a company vehicle, cell phone,
and
iPad.
We've worked with you for 2 years, and everyone we've come in contact with was fantastic. When we had a weird ant thing when we first moved in, we needed to figure out why they were here. Someone was there the next day, if not that day, depending on what time I called. So we are more than happy with everything Summit's done. Before I get to the final question, I have to ask, because I know that you've seen some things. Do you have any horror stories that you could share?
So many. But the crowd favorite, and I know that you've already heard this story.
Me. Yes, I love this.
And once again, I hate to be so heavy on the raccoons and just the brutality of what I do. It's like it's actually a very small sliver of my day-to-day existence. But it by far and large is, I don't want to say the crowd favorite, but... Like,
well, people
I tell a lot of stories, and people know this one, and they ask me to repeat it. So anywho, 10 years ago, I was relatively fresh in the industry, and I had taken my lunch break at my home, and I finished up. It's a nice sunny summer afternoon, and just a regular day. So I hop in the truck, and I have to head up to Washington for some work up there, and I get up on to the 84, and for local listeners, you might know what I'm talking about. You're taking the curve around Park Rose, and I've got my music going, I got the window down, sunglasses on, I'm just, I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
But then I see something moving out of the corner of my eye in my rearview mirror, and I'm like, well, that's bizarre, maybe I'm seeing something,
right?
And I see it again. And next thing you know, a raccoon has gotten out of its cage.
Oh, no.
And is coming straight for me, beelining the bed of my truck into the cab.
That's different than rat behavior.
Absolutely. That this raccoon was pissed and it wanted to let me know about it. So I'm driving down the road and I don't know what I'm going to do. I have nowhere to pull off. There's no exits. This is all happening fast. I mean, we're talking in a matter of 30 seconds from me noticing it to this raccoon coming into the car with me. So the raccoon is latched on to my left arm. I'm steering with my right arm, trying to shake this thing loose.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my God, like I'm gonna get rabies. Like, I know that's not like a
it's
realistic
a full
threat.
Grown raccoon.
A full 40-pound adult raccoon.
Ugh.
And so it's got a hold of me.
Tiny little raccoon hands.
And so, I am still impressed at my agility and astuteness at handling this.
Yeah.
So I take the wheel with my knee take my right arm and, like, I've maybe thrown three punches in my entire life, but this was, like, the Muhammad Ali
right.
connection, and I got it right between the eyes, and that raccoon goes flying out my window. And what's right behind me but a semi, and this raccoon goes tumbling and just connects with the grill of this semi truck and just splatters.
Oh my God, you punched a raccoon out of a car.
I felt like Arnold Schwarzenegger, kind of. It's it was almost like the Last Action Hero.
Kind of more Jean-Claude Van Damme, but yeah, I see what you mean. So, wow.
That was certainly the most exhilarating moment I've ever had.
Sure.
I've had far more grotesque and just generally gross experiences, but that was definitely the most standout issue I've ever had.
And let's have a gross one.
Okay, another raccoon story.
Oh, God.
It's always raccoons.
It's all the raccoons.
They're the most interesting animal I deal with.
Yes, so.
So, right around the same time frame, I hated working for that company because I had to do that like on a daily basis.
Oh, no.
So, it's the middle of summer. I go out to an elderly woman's home, and it was a trailer, mobile home.
Yeah.
And it's like 95 degrees out. She's complaining about a smell. I walk in and I'm like, oh my God. Like, I'm gagging just in your living room. How are you living with this? So, of course, I got to go underneath the house, and it's my job to go fish this thing out. And, you know, like, I'm literally making like 10 bucks an hour back then. It was just hell on earth. It's like the most atrocious thing that you've ever done for the least amount of money.
Right.
It was awful. And so I don't know if you're familiar with how a mobile home is designed.
No.
Their insulation is actually encapsulated in like a heavy, thick mesh, like black, like cotton threaded mesh. So you can't see any of it. And so I'm like, okay, obviously it's up there. And so I have to take my respirator off and smell where it is. And so I get like a general approximation. I'm like, okay, smells real bad right here. Let's check it out. So I break out my pocket knife, cut open the tarping, reach up. I'm like, shit, I'm off.
Oh.
So I cut it a little bit more, and then I really reach over, and then the whole thing breaks.
Ugh.
And thousands upon thousands of maggots come raining down on my bare face. Along with a liquefied raccoon.
That's the worst kind of raccoon.
It really is. Yeah, it's not a smoothie at all.
Oh, so gross.
Yeah, that was I still don't feel clean after that. That was 10 years ago.
No, because like it could go in your mouth and your nose, and
I'm sure that I probably ate at least like three or four maggots.
Gross.
I mean, your natural intuition is to
no. Oh no. That.
Yeah, I farted flies for like 2 weeks.
Oh, God. Which brings me to my last question. What are your dreams like?
Oh, I squashed those a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean like when you're asleep, not aspirations.
Well, I think it works on both.
Oh, yeah.
I very rarely will...
You don't have nightmares?
Dream about
armies
work
of
stuff.
Raccoons and...
And I don't necessarily want to say I've compartmentalized like what I do.
Sure.
While it can be graphic and gross, and you know, it certainly isn't like what I dreamed about being, you know, when I grew up.
Right.
But I do enjoy what I do. I understand that there's just a need, and how I reconciled this years and years ago was, you know, someone's doing this job. Mm-hmm. I can do it better, safer, a more humane way, because I have interacted with some fairly sadistic people out there that have taken pleasure in the harming of animals.
It could be a field where people do it for different reasons.
Yeah.
You sound like you're doing it for a healthy perspective, and that your brain likes to solve these problems and help people, and I'm sure there's also people that just like to kill things.
Yeah. That there is a fair amount of people like that in this country.
And I'm glad that I met you then and not them, because I wouldn't want to be inviting someone that likes to kill things in the studio.
Come on into my home. Yeah. Meet my family, right?
Let's record a podcast together. Yeah. Although many people would listen to a sadistic killer, for sure.
It's kind of the rage right now. I mean, I feel like I've watched like 5 Ted Bundy movies in the past.
Like, it's year. Like all they're making is stories about Ted Bundy right now. It's so it's like, bizarre.
I mean, that happened a long time ago. The rights must have came up years ago.
I guess. It's very confusing because it's just like Bundy, Bundy, Bundy.
Did you see the latest one on Netflix with Zac Efron plays no, Ted Bundy?
I didn't see that one. But, you know.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
And I know of Zac Efron, and it's one of those actors that, you know, I've probably prematurely dismissed because it's tied to something that I am unfamiliar with. And
yeah,
it seems like I wouldn't be into, which is unfair. But
I don't know much about him at all, really.
Yeah.
But the one thing I know is
I've seen him like a barbershop or something like that, or like a salon or something like that, where like it was a bar in Southwest Portland, the Jolly Roger. They have him without a shirt on.
Oh,
this, you know, Ripley six pack ass.
Yeah. Oh, the Jolly Roger. Yeah. That's one of the last bars that I'm like, I don't want to see it go away.
They're both still there.
There's so many dive bars, you know, that I could turn around and I'm like, wait, what? It's a terrarium? Like a terrarium store was where I used to get drunk right here. Okay, seems weird, but every single one. New Portland. All right. Great. Well, that brings us to the end. Thank you, James, for being here.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for watching Of Unknown Origin. And thank you all for listening to VHS. I'll see you next time when I talk to a different person with a different profession about a different movie. Bye-bye.
Links to our guest and topics of the conversation are up on the website vh-us.com. Please share our episode with anyone who you think would be interested. Rate, review, and what have you on your preferred platforms. If you would like to follow along visually, our Instagram is vh.us. If you're going to be in Portland, Oregon, or you live in Portland, Oregon, and you would like to be a guest, then please put guest and your profession in the heading of the email. If you'd like to recommend a movie, then please put movie and the title in the heading. Thank you for listening. I'd also like to thank my engineer, JL, and my producer, Wade Allen, and of course, my amazing wife, Sarah Marshall. Until next time, I'm Dirk Marshall, and this has been VHS.